Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Burgun. This is episode 46, and welcome. I haven't done an episode in a little while. If you missed the last episode, it was a really good one. I'm excited to have had Naomi Clark on the show. I just got her Kickstarted game, Consenticle. If you play that game with the right person, it's really great. I would go check that out. So today I don't have a guest. Today is going to be, I'm going to be talking, two major sections of this show. One is going to be, I'm going to be talking about, management in games, or, just a framing of strategy and decisions, it's kind of a reframing of something I've talked about many times before, talking about it in a slightly new way, I think. And then the second half of the show will be, and that's going to be like the theory half. So I'm going to be, I think what people listen to the show for, I assume, is mostly like the game design theory stuff, because that's kind of what I do. That's my my big contribution. And then at the end of the show, if you're like a fan of my general work, you can catch up on what I've been working on by listening to the second half of the show. So anyway, let's dive into our first big topic. And then, most of the sort of housekeeping show notes-y sort of stuff will be at the end. So I wanted to call this episode something like Against Management or Management and Decisions, something like that. Because I find, I have this thing called the Game Design Book Club over on my forums and my Discord, which you're welcome to come join us anytime. But, and it's cool because it forces me to play games that I would not play otherwise. Because, like, I don't know about you, but, like, for me, when I look through the Steam store page or just I hear recommendations or anything like that, I very quickly form opinions about things. And those opinions are that this thing will be bad, or that this thing is not for me, that I get it already just from looking at a few screenshots and reading a couple of, blurbs about it. I feel like I understand what it's going to be, how it's going to work. And I feel like I've already been there, done that, even though I've never played this game before, because, I've played a lot of games and there are patterns that keep kind of coming up. And I feel like I get how things work. And it is very rare that I'm actually surprised when I do play games. But there's also this annoying selection bias-y sort of thing where, you play a game, you come into it kind of thinking like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be this, I don't know, Diablo clone or something. And you start playing it and it basically looks like, I was right. And, do you keep playing? Like, it's very easy around that time to just kind of move on and to be like, okay, yeah, this seems like what I thought it was going to be. And then, people will tell you like, yeah, but if you just keep stick with it, it gets better. And maybe it does, but it's hard to know if that is true or if just the game just kind of gets their hooks into people. The reason I started the book club, other than just it's a good social thing to like get, conversation happening and stuff like that. But also I started it for my own purpose of like, okay, this is going to force me to play these games. We vote on the games that are going to get played. And then for a whole month, I have to play this one game. And I really did stick with a lot of these games much longer than I would have were it not for the Game Design Book Club. Probably the one that I had the most negative reaction to of all of them when I first played it, I think was probably Slay the Spire, which I know is a very popular game. And I get why it's popular. I get why people like it. But, for me, it was that roguelike pattern of a bunch of random stuff in this long wrapper, metagame wrapper sort of thing, and very, very tactical, right now, what do I do right now, constantly, over a very long, it has this long match structure that just is, a match is like over an hour or something. And it's just, the pacing is weird, and I'm sure it gets better once you really know what you're doing, but there's this weird question of like, oh, how do I like get through this initial hump of like really feeling like this is not very intriguing? And I don't know, on some level, some of that is me maybe. And I have to just like kind of work through some of my problems with like, you know, just maybe being too judgmental or, you know, hating things too much, being too into hating things. That may all be at play. But at the same time, there is something in these games there's something that's missing from these games. And so, like, we played a bunch of games recently. We did Slay the Spire right now. Cinco Paws is one of our game. Or Cinco Paws, it might be pronounced. I don't know. A lot of times people just call it 5P. And a lot of pretty much all these new indie games, including my own game, Oro, Into the Breach comes to mind. Oro also, they all kind of feel the same to play. Like, you look at the screen, you do some simple like arithmetic or just like look ahead, and you make the like the obvious best decision. I mean, in Slay the Spire, that's really very there's so much of Slay the Spire is making like just obvious rote correct choices. It seems like the skill of the game really comes in knowing all of the things in the game, like all the extra trinkets and stuff, and also a few other things and just kind of luck also. But for the most part, you're doing these like very simple, like just addition, subtraction things. And, you know, in Oro too, like a lot of gameplay is just, you know, looking one turn ahead and just making the less bad move for you. And on some level, I think that people will hear that and be like, yeah, that's what games are. But it's not what games are. It doesn't have to be what they are. Games don't have to feel like this very localized. And this goes to my talk about long arcs and short arcs. Games don't have to feel like I'm just in this little circle and just making the best moves that are within this circle, and I can see what the best moves are for the most part, and I pretty much am just making them. And, you know, part of what I'm talking about here is an issue of just these games are a little bit too solvable, and that's why they have to rely on randomness so much. All of these games have extreme levels of randomness. I mean, it's funny because Oro, you know, I tried so hard to minimize some of the randomness, but actually, like, one of the biggest factors in Oro that really randomizes things is just, like, the turn order of monsters and the way that monsters move. There's a few like weird rules in there that are like some of that's learnable. Most players don't even learn it. And some of it is just straight up random. And so, you know, there is actually a lot of randomness in Oro. It's expressed in a different way that doesn't read as random to people, but it kind of is. And so all these games rely on this kind of non-uniform, as I called it in my recent article, variable randomness. And I think that's because they are kind of shallow. And just this sort of rote management action. And I'm not saying that there should be no games like that. So let me talk a little bit more about management real quick. So that you know what I mean by management. The classic example is like this bar game kind of thing, like The Sims or something, where you have like five or six different bars and you just got to kind of keep them all high. And one goes down and then you got to make that one go back up. And then another goes down, you got to make that one go back up. And that a lot of games sort of just feel that way. Very few connections between larger systems. Everything's very incremental and very local, very tactical. I would say that management could also be thought of as maybe just logistics. Like, okay, what are we like actually going to do moment to moment? And it just ultimately just feels, it doesn't feel like expression. It feels more like just squeezing efficiency out of this machine. And that's really a good way to explain what I'm trying to say, is that you're really just maximizing and being efficient with this little machine rather than, and there's something else. Like, I think there's a tendency, I can hear people who wouldn't agree with me saying that's all there is. Everything is just squeezing efficiency. All games, all strategy games are just a matter of squeezing efficiency out of something. And I, on one level, that's true, but on another level, it may just be a matter of like how clearly it's that and how directly it's that. So yeah, there's most strategy games that we know of, especially in video games and especially in indie games, really are just management games that are logistical games about efficiency. And that's what I kind of want to move us away from, if possible, or not move us away from even. I think those games should exist. I think that's something that people should always make. I'm interested in, can we make something that's not that? And I think that's kind of been my big project for the last at least few years. And so how would we move away from that? Like, let's say you're skeptical right now of everything I'm saying. You think that that all games are just management, or that management is good, you know, like that this like simple mathematics, you know, calculations, addition, subtraction, local things that you like that. Okay, that's fine. But come with me for a minute and just and like think about what else could be. Is there an alternative? That's worth asking whether or not you're interested in it. I've been thinking about decisions, the phrase decisions, and whether, like, I think, you know, Sid Meier, his games are just a series of interesting decisions, and this focus on decisions as the sort of kernel, the core part of games and the basic unit of like gameplay or something. I think that's maybe not the best word. Especially when you think about like how I think about games as, you know, games are a contest of, for lack of a better term, decision-making, a contest of strategy. So what we want to do is measure a player's ability to understand a system in kind of a complete and correct way. So the player makes a bunch of inputs over the course of a match. And at the end of the match, they get feedback that tells them you've won or you've lost. And that initial, you know, or final bit of feedback sort of informs everything that happened up to it, you know, like this long series of events, and everything was leading up to that, and the player can kind of then step away and process, like, okay, all those things that happened or didn't happen and how they led up to this final outcome. And it was a win, so they're like, okay, I can see how on turn 33 or you know, it's sort of in the early mid game, there was this thing that happened, and that I can see how that sort of tied into this greater thing that happened. And so they start like extracting these very loose heuristic lessons from the wins and the losses. But what we don't want to measure, this goes to a conversation about like how long should turn timers be? How long should you let players sit there and think about their turn and calculation, and how much should you let players calculate? How much do we want players to be able to sit there and calculate? And in most games that exist, you know, if you let players sit there and think about their decision for a really long time, they will make a better decision often, if not all the time. So like, for example, if you have two players of equal skill and one player takes 10 seconds per turn and the other player takes 30 seconds per turn, probably the 30 second per turn player will win. Let's say it's a 2-player game like chess or something. And I think that's true. But at the same time, you know, I think we also understand that, or at least it's hard for me to say exactly that we understand, but for me, it definitely seems like we don't want players to just be sitting there brain burning, on like really hard calculation things. You know, I mean, if we wanted that, we can play chess and go. And I think that one of the reasons that chess and go's popularity are declining over time and will continue to decline is not that computers are playing them, but that, I mean, we have things that are just a lot more pleasurable to play. I honestly, like something like Hearthstone, as much as I have real complaints with it, on just a very basic human level, interacting with Hearthstone is way less stressful. Even though if you're playing like a competitive two-player match, it's far less stressful, I think, than playing chess or Go in a similar atmosphere. And I think that's because they really cap how much calculation you can do. And that's something I've talked about a lot, information horizon and why that's important. And, you know, I think that what if we didn't allow players to think at all in games? You know, what if and I mean, real-time games arguably tend to kind of work this way. That I would say they tend to work way, they're much too fast, and they have this whole execution thing, which we don't need to get into right now. But, you know, if you just, what if there wasn't a timer exact per se, but players just played when a move came to them? Like players just like looked at the board and were like, okay, I think I want to do this. Boom. And just like made turns quickly. There's a lot of question as to how do you like sort of motivate players to do that. That's something I'm working with my game, and all my games going forward will have some kind of solution to that. But I guess what I'm saying is like, I want to make games where I don't want to test you on what you can do when you think for like a minute. I want to test you on like, what is your sense about this game? That's what I want people to, that's what I want to test. I don't want you to sit there, look at the board and calculate stuff out. I want to know when you just like see the board with your just general vision and you see this, the state of the game and you've been there through the last 50 turns or whatever. What is your sense about what you should do? That's what I want to measure. And that is partially for, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that I do think that's a more pleasurable experience for players, is to just kind of do what they want to do, you know, and it's a little bit more play-like. It's a little bit more, it feels more like play, more improvised, more spontaneous. And whereas this like sitting there and calculating out moves, the more I do that, I don't know about you, but the more I do that, the less I feel like this move has anything to do with me, right? It's not a reflection of me, especially in a game like Slay the Spire, where, you know, it's like, I don't know, he's got like 12 health and I have a thing that does 6 damage, or I don't know, and he's got 2 armor and I have a thing that does 8 damage, and, you know, I just have to do a little bit plus and minus math sort of stuff. The more I get into that and like just figure out the right optimal solution, the less that this thing I'm inputting has anything to do with me. It's not me. It's not a reflection of me. It's just, I just mathed out the right answer. And you know, I think on that level, I'm saying something not controversial, which is like, to the extent that something is solvy, it's bad, but I am putting a new frame on why that's bad. It's not bad because, I'm trying to think what the typical explanation for why that's bad is. I don't know. People just say it's boring, or, but I think the one of the reasons is it's not expressing anything about you. But that's what we want to test, is you and your understanding of the system. So on one level, this is kind of a obvious claim of, you know, you don't want solved systems. But on the other level, like, the more you let people calculate stuff and think about stuff, the more you're letting them just use, you know, logic and math to remove themselves, actually, from the situation. I hope that makes sense. Like, whereas when you don't let them use those tools, really, and you just say, hey, here's a thing. Tell me what you think of it. You get something that's them more. And this doesn't have to mean anything like metaphysical or remotely like spiritual or anything like that. It's just that you get more of a snapshot of their basic, because like, and you know, to take it to another example, if you think about games like chess or Go, if you have a grandmaster or whatever play like super fast blitz chess or Go, where they have like 5 seconds to make a turn, they're still going to like destroy me. So it's not as though when you just, you know, your skill still comes through, your skill is still being tested. And so basically, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I want to make these games that allow players to be creative. And management and this calculation stuff is almost the opposite of creativity. And this this search for creativity in decision spaces, I guess, if we want to use that term, is something I've always been looking for. And this is just another way to look at it. I want to make games that feel more like a natural conversation. And that doesn't mean between two people. It could just be one person speaking, as I am right now. Games don't have to be stressful. Even serious competitive games. It's funny. I was thinking of, I was a big fan of Outwitters, which came out. It was a game by One Man Left for the iOS platform, 6-7 years ago now. And I still do think it's one of the better tactical war games out there. And I've just, I've had trouble motivating myself to play their newest game, which is called Hex Gambit. And I've been trying to think about why it is. And really, it's this problem. It's really just a management thing. In fact, that game doesn't appear to have hidden information of any kind, other than, I guess, you can spawn new units in or something. I haven't played it that much, but it just really seems like, you know, it seems like one of these like simplified chess kind of things, like a abstract board game. And, you know, I was thinking about, like, how could I motivate myself to play this and to want to get good at this? And the main thing I actually went to was, well, I could enjoy this if I was, like, beating someone. If I was, like, you know, beating another player, I could enjoy this. And that was just like, whoa, that's really weird. Like, because I haven't been playing a lot of, like, two-player competitive games, and so I've sort of stepped out of that that two-player competitive kind of headspace, but then I like sort of remembered it when I was thinking about how to get excited about a game like Hex Gambit. The only way I can get excited about that is if I just think about like using this system, and I'm gonna like manage it just slightly better than the other guy, and I'm gonna beat him. And it's interesting because, like, if it wasn't a person, I wouldn't feel that way. If it was just a bot, I'd be like, who cares? But, like, so there's this other thing. This is one of the many ways in which games work, especially two-player competitive games, is their real engine is not their decision space. It's not creative play. It's dominating another person and sort of sorting yourself above someone else. Even just for a minute in this one weird little competition, it feels good. And I think that's kind of like a toxic sort of good feeling. You know, I want to move away from games that socially like stratify human beings, you know, to the extent that that's possible. I always want to make discipline based games. I always want to make games that test your ability to, you know, understand this system. But, you know, I don't want to really rank players against each other. I want to rank you against yourself. And of course, you know, players some will be better than others. And that's just that I don't know how to avoid that. You know, some people are better at the guitar than other people. And I don't know how to exactly avoid that. But, and I'm thinking about actively, like, how do we move further away from that? But anyway, for now, my point is just the actual engine of a lot of these games, I mean, there's many different engines. A lot of them, it's gambling. It's like, I want to, you know, win big at the Hearthstone table. I want to, like, just have all my good cards just come at the right time and have everything fall into place. And I think that's one of the motivations. And for these abstract games, yeah, I think they're much about this management and just managing just a little better than the other guy so that you can beat him. So, the games that I want to make would have to be, so like, how do we do that? What are the solutions? If anyone agrees that maybe we want to make games that are more about creativity, more about play, more about improvisation, and more about just like getting this snapshot picture of this actual person, not this person plus 5 minutes of calculation time. But just, what does this person think? What do you think right now? If we wanted to do that, how do we do that? Without relying on randomness or other things like that, to kind of just make it be meaningless. We want our win and loss state to really mean something about you and who you are. So the way that I have been thinking about doing that is, you know, longer arcs. I've been writing a lot about short and long arcs. A lot of these games are very short arc focused, or they have very little in the way of medium or long arcs. A shorter information horizon. There should be very little that you're able to actually really calculate out. Also just in general, bigger, more complex games. A lot of the games that we're making they're just very, very, very simple. And, you know, you look at them and you're like, you just see a screenshot and you're like, I see already all the things that I need to think about. And it's just a matter of calculating all the stuff out and knowing all the rules. And that's it. And I want to make a game that has like layers, layers of strategy that are all sort of tied together into each other. And so, you know, I could talk about my game and what I'm trying to do for Omnocronom, which, you know, so you have this lane pushing game and you're pushing that. You have several different resources at once going on. You have stats, you have health. The health has its own little sort of bar game throughout the match that's happening. It's going up and down over time. You have items that you're finding that change dramatically, like where you'll be able to push, where you won't be able to push. You have the guardian monsters that come out, and they all have different powers, but they also, some of them are going after you, some of them are going after your base. And there's a pretty large map, and there's lots of areas that mean different things on this map. So you cannot just look at a screenshot and know exactly what to do. And now I just added this new thing called Defender Minions, where you can have one lane being sort of passively defended by your minions. It's a big game. It's complicated. Your character has abilities that have cooldowns. There's status effects. There's a lot of, like, I'm also leaning on a lot of, what I'm trying to do is use a lot of the D&D stuff that we all understand, stuff like buffs and health and lives and, I guess lives aren't from D&D, but they're from video games, and damage and damage types and, you know, all this stuff. I'm trying to use that all in a system that that hopefully will feel like kind of loose. I am inspired a lot by League of Legends for this, because when you play League, you can just move around and sort of feel like sometimes it feels, and I think this is why it's appealing, is that sometimes it feels, you know, especially if you're not playing at a super competitive level, it just feels a little bit open and a little bit free. And you can kind of just like, I don't know, I want to move up here. I want to just go down to this little forest area here. And not for like a totally toy reason of like just exploring the edges, but sometimes it might be the right thing to do. Like sometimes it might be a good idea to just go sit up in that bush for a little bit, or like go just, I don't know, war dragon, or there's a lot of space in the game to do stuff. And I think, and then it also has a pretty long match length. and it doesn't have a lot in the way of, you know, some other thing, like some CCG thing layer that's like totally disconnected. I wrote recently about the Connect 4 CCG, and it doesn't really have that. Like, the whole match, you're trying to push lanes, basically. And even when you're not trying to push lanes, you kind of, it's for the purpose of pushing lanes. And, so I'm trying to sort of recreate that in a sort of turn-based environment, keeping it fast. And this actually leads pretty well into the second part of this show. Before I go into the second part, if you do have thoughts about this whole first part about the management and all that stuff, let me know. I'd like to hear what you have to say on that. I hope that I made my points clearly. And I know it's kind of, it's a bit of a fuzzy thing for me. So if you know, if you come away from this being like, what the hell are you talking about? Then, you know, I kind of understand how someone would feel that way. But I definitely have something in mind. Whether or not I can express it clearly is another question. So, all right, let's get into the second part of the show where I'm going to just talk about what I've been working on, because I've been working on a lot of things. Technically, I've been working on 4 games recently, which is kind of dumb because it's just like, oh my God, it's so much to keep managing of. I've over the years, I've gotten pretty good at, as being a freelancer and stuff. I've gotten pretty good at like time management and stuff, but this is like super challenging my ability to manage my time. So Escape the Omnicronom is going really well. I just posted on my Patreon page, that's patreon.com/KeithBurgun, the title screen for the game. And it may also be on the show notes for this. This month, right now, July, we're on July 2nd right now. I'll probably release this on the 3rd. This is going to be the big month for Omnicronom, where we really put everything back to like together. The game, you know, it started years ago. It's in its like 5th major iteration, and 5th and final major iteration. And I've had a complete reskin of the game. It's got a completely new palette. It's got new monsters, new minions, new mechanics, new systems, and new UI. And I've just slowly been putting everything in there and getting it all ready for playtesting. Now, playtesting should start happening in the next, honestly, the next week, probably. So we'll see about that. It's going to be released August 1st. That's our goal for that. So that should be pretty cool if we can make that happen. And I'm very, it's happening. August 1st is happening, I assure you, because we are going to be at Play NYC on August 11th. So I want to make sure the game is out and available by the time we do that. There's that game. There's just so many systems. There's item systems. There's the lane minions and tower balance. There's this new defender minions thing. I'm going to start writing about it. But it's just, I have so much. There's the rank system, there's the cards. It's just, it's huge. I've never worked on a game that has this much going on. So, luckily I do have more help for this game, than I have in the past. So that's going well. But man, once you have more help, it's like, it's funny because then you are also like a team manager, and that's another job that you have to do on top of everything. So it's pretty intense. We're getting animations into the game now, which are really cool. I posted a GIF about that, of that somewhere recently, probably just in the Discord. You should check that out. It really makes it play like a real video game. So that's Escape from Omnicronom. That should be coming August 1st. The other game that I'm working on pretty passively, it's on the back burner, but I have a coder that's working on a digital prototype for Splash Clash on Lake Street. That's my card game that's inspired by Serlin's Puzzle Strike. And that's coming along. Actually, the prototype is, it's almost there where we can play it multiplayer and stuff. That's going to be really neat. And so that's coming along. I don't have a lot of news on that one, but it's coming along. And then I have 2 new games that I started over the last like 2 weeks. And I did that because I got very inspired at Practice NYC Practice Game Design and Detail, the NYU Game Design Conference, which, by the way, I recommend. People who are fans of this show should definitely consider going to that. It's been getting better, and this year was, in my opinion, the best one yet. It was really cool. Met a lot of cool people. Just very inspiring to go to one of those things. And I missed them. I haven't done them one since, I think, 2016, which is when I went to Horseshoe, Project Horseshoe, which is pretty cool also. And so the two new games I started working on, one, I just wanted to... I've been wanting to make a traitor game, like the Resistance or Werewolf or one of those. And I finally just got the right ingredients together, and I did a play test of this game, and it just worked. So I'm going to be play testing that again today, actually, maybe while you're listening to this. That's on the 3rd. So we'll see how that goes. But I hope that I can get that thing done really quickly. Unfortunately, it's not the kind of thing I can kickstart because it doesn't have any big, in order to kickstart something, you need kind of like a gimmick of some kind. And it's just a good traitor game. So I don't think, and I say traitor like that so that people don't think I'm saying traitor, because there's trading games where you do a lot of trading. But anyway, if I can come up with a cool, high concept-y, funny thing for it, then maybe I can kickstart it. But other than that, I think, I don't know, maybe I might just release it as like print and play or something. And then finally, I'm actually making an RPG, and I'm not going to talk too much about that here just yet, but I know that sounds crazy, but I want to make like an Undertale-y kind of an RPG. It's going to have no combat. It's not going to be about collecting and harvesting everything on the entire planet. It's going to be a lot about exploration and a lot about conversation. Very short dialogue that is highly interactive. And I have a story. Actually, I was working on a storybook, like a children's book kind of thing for a while. And then I was like, well, let me just see if this would work as an RPG. And I played around with it, and actually it works even better as an RPG. So I have started on that, but it's also very backburnery. Probably I'll start on that seriously after I get Omnocronom out after July. Because, like I said, this month is going to be pretty crazy. But anyways, I'm feeling good about stuff. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I've had two articles on the burner for a while. Hopefully I can get them out soon. But yeah, that pretty much concludes the show today. As always, you can come by the Discord or the forums, and we have a lot of good conversations going on there. We got the Game Design Book Club going on there. We have a lot of game developers there that are working on games and posting about their prototypes, and you're welcome to come do that too. If you're working on something, you should come post it. It doesn't have to be a strategy game. It doesn't have to be any big serious thing. Just come bring it over to the forums and the Discord, post about it, and we'll check it out and give you some thoughts. Anyway, thank you so much for watching, and I will see you next time. Hey, if you enjoyed the show, please consider becoming a patron over at my Patreon account, which is patreon.com/KeithBurgun. It's slowly been ticking up over the years, and now it's doing pretty well, and I'm getting good feedback, and I'm posting at least twice a month, I think, with some stuff just for patrons, and that's going to probably uptick a lot this month. So yeah, if you want to help out and see some cool extra stuff, please become a patron, and I hope I'll see you there. If otherwise, just spread the word, and that always helps a lot. Retweets and all those kind of things. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.